ladies and gentlemen. The story you are about to hear is true.
Dateline, Chicago. A 50-year-old man tried to break into a home in the 8100 block of South Champlain Avenue around midnight Sunday, June 2nd, when he was shot by the homeowner, according to police. Paramedics transported the suspect to the University of Chicago Hospital, where he was listed in critical condition. Police said the homeowner was a registered concealed carry holder. The victim was not injured and faces no charges. This has been the Defense of Gun Use, DGU Files.
The story you have just heard was true.
America Armed and Free is a paid program on KVOI, wholly owned by Charles Heller, produced, engineered, paid for, and hosted by him. Any opinions are his, not necessarily the station's.
I, Harry S. Truman, President of the United States, dedicate this day of Sunday to America, armed and free.
The Constitution does not say that government shall decree the right to keep and bear arms. The Constitution says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
I am a minute man. I am the guardian of America, armed and free. For we knew it will always be the citizen who is the guardian of America, armed and free.
Welcome to America Armed and Free, a program dedicated to preserving your God-granted, constitutionally guaranteed individual right to keep and bear arms in defense of self or state, understanding that the citizens are the militia. This program is produced by Charles Heller and is not endorsed by anyone who isn't pro-choice on freedom.
We are the guardians of America, armed and free.
Indeed, we are the guardians of America, armed and free, and last week, or was it 2 weeks ago, we had Randy Sutton on, and Randy and I had a disagreement on air right at the end of the program. He's a wonderful guy with 34 years of service in law enforcement and an organization dedicated to helping those people who are injured on the job and who are basically being ignored by their agencies. And we were disagreeing a little bit at the end of the hour about the liability when a police officer does something in the line of duty that causes a death and it amounts to negligence, as to whether or not it should attach criminal culpability. And I really, just the clock cut us off at the end, and I wanted to finish that discussion with Randy, and he's had the honor and integrity to come to say, yes, let's have that discussion and be back on the line with us. So, Randy, welcome back.
I thought we designed that very, very well for a cliffhanger.
No, that wasn't a design. That was an actual, that was an on-the-air occurrence, if you will, that surprised, I think, probably both of us. And as a result, I wanted to have that aired fully and let Andy Atura et al. Torna pars, let the other side be heard. So please state what you were saying before, because I perceived you stated something attributed to me that I did not say, and so I wanted you to say out loud and in the clear what it was you were saying about cases where police officers cause a death through negligence as to whether or not they should be held criminally culpable.
Okay, good. Yeah. So what we were talking about, there are instances, and there have been plenty of them, that due to a whatever the circumstances were that led to the death, that perhaps a perception. A perfect example: Fresno PD. A couple of years ago, this was a pretty well documented case. The law enforcement officers from Fresno had got involved in a foot pursuit with a burglary suspect. And it was very dark. They were in the backyards of this home and chasing this guy. And they confronted him. And he reached behind him and went into a looked like a shooting stance, and they killed him. Mm-hmm. Well, he had a phone. It wasn't a weapon, but they didn't know that. They were going under the assumption from the low light, the totality of the circumstances. Mm-hmm. They felt threatened and they opened fire and they killed him. Well, it wasn't a weapon. So if you were to assign criminal culpability for that and put a police officer in prison because of those circumstances, then that's what I'm talking about as far as being something that should not take place. Would there be civil culpability? And the answer to that is yes. And that's why there's two different parts of the criminal justice system. One is for civil remedy, and the other is for a criminal remedy. And so what we were talking about is the way I interpreted your statement was that there should always be criminal culpability if it leads to a death.
No, that's not what I said. And that's why
that's the way I interpret it.
I got it, but that's not what I said. What I said was, if there is negligence that amounts to a death that was caused by that negligence, it should attach to criminal liability. And here is why. Number one is, you can't, whether you're in law enforcement or not, you cannot act so negligently that it causes someone to die and not expect a consequence from it. What I'm not talking about is qualified immunity, like the circumstance you talked about in Fresno, where a reasonable police officer believing that a person reaching behind themselves and assuming a shooting stance would normally indicate that a person is a threat and then fired because of that, it's not negligent that he didn't have, it's not negligence at all. It is normal performance of duty, assuming that the other person's behavior amounted to them having a weapon, which is a clear and present danger to them, and they fired, and it seems they would be justified. I hope they weren't found guilty of anything, were they?
Well, the city paid.
They weren't found
guilty of anything. The city paid in a civil remedy. Sure,
I got that.
But here's the issue, and why this is such a complicated.
Mm-hmm.
There's not one set of circumstances.
No, there isn't.
That fits all of these. Where you can just say, okay, negligence. Negligence is a big word and can mean a lot of different things, and a lot of different interpretations. So there's not a blanket kind of statement here. Every set of circumstances needs to be judged for all of the elements. And when I talk about criminal culpability, the word negligence can mean a lot of different things. And you and I were talking about the officer who thought she was using her taser and opened fire with her weapon.
Right. I believe that's Minnesota. Is that Minnesota or is that Texas? That's okay. I don't expect you to know every case. That's okay. I'm not here to grill you.
Yeah, but the circumstances themselves, there's a lot of different elements in play here, and this is really important to talk about. So we're facing a crisis now in retention of officers and recruitment of officers, and that's unfortunately a national issue now, right? Look at Minneapolis PD as a perfect example. They're down almost 50%, which may have led to the death of an officer just last week, because normally they would be riding two-man cars. But because they don't have the personnel anymore, because of the policies and the anti-law enforcement, kind of attitude.
Sentiment.
Right. And so now they don't have enough cops. So they're forcing their police officers to work mandatory overtime, which leads to fatigue, and also sending them out at times in one-man cars. And that led to the death of an officer, ambush murder of a police officer just last week. So you have a set of circumstances where police agencies are literally diminishing their standards of hiring in order to
fill the ranks.
Right. Put bodies in uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's why this is such a critical issue. So if you diminish the standards, and then at the same time you diminish the training standards and what is required to get through a police academy and what is required to do continuing education, then you have law enforcement officers who are not given
they're not qualified
training and skills.
Yeah, they're not. You develop a less than quality standard of law enforcement.
Right. And then when they screw up, we put them in prison. That's part of the issue.
It's not. It is part of the issue. There's another side to that coin, though. Okay. And I mean, literally, there is another side to the coin. Okay. And the other side of that coin is that if you have officers that aren't held criminally liable when they do something negligent, and I realize that term is not clearly defined, but if they do something that is outside of their training and is outside or ignores, or more importantly, ignores a part of their training and therefore causes a death, if you don't hold an officer criminally liable for something like that, what happens is the community as a whole, number one, mistrusts the police, number two, is hesitant to call the police, and number three, will not come to the assistance of an officer even when he's clearly in danger. That's the other side of that coin. Would you address that, please?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but I think it's pretty nebulous. You know, when you assign kind of a blanket statement like that, I don't know that it's accurate. I understand what you're saying. The people need to have confidence in their cops. They need to believe in them. They need to believe that they're there for the right reasons. They need to believe that they are acting in good faith. They need to believe that they are there to protect them, and they need to have confidence in their integrity.
So, Randy, let me ask you a direct question because we're going to run into the first break, okay?
Okay, yeah.
Did the actions of the FBI and the U.S. Marshals Service at Ruby Ridge increase the public's confidence in ATF and the Marshals Service or decrease it?
Oh, decrease it, absolutely.
Well, so it's not nebulous at all. When you have
under those circumstances,
but what I'm talking about, it's not nebulous at all. When you have a circumstance where the officer accidentally uses her gun instead of her taser, does it increase the public's confidence or decrease the public's confidence in the law enforcement officer?
Oh, it decreases the public confidence, but it doesn't mean you put that person in prison for it.
No, that's not why you do it. You do it because it's an act of negligence which led to a death.
Well, I don't believe that that's the proper remedy.
Well, I lovingly accept your belief in it, and I don't call you wrong, but I would also, you know, peacefully and nicely disagree with you. Obviously, it's not murder. It's manslaughter. It's certainly not murder. There was no intent to commit a death. But she had an intent not to use deadly force and used it anyway, admittedly mistakenly. But when your mistake rises to the level of a death of a person who wouldn't have died if you didn't shoot him, then that has to attach criminal liability. Because if it doesn't, what you're saying is the police are not to be held criminally accountable when they act in a way that is defined as a criminal act.
But it's not necessarily defined as a criminal act. That's why there are other remedies for these type of situations, and there are civil remedies and there are administrative remedies. So a police officer has a rule book. I mean, they have a policy manual. It's about 480,000 pages long, right? Mm-hmm. And if they don't follow those rules and regulations in all of their conduct, then
they're accountable
to discipline.
They're accountable.
Right, exactly. So those are one set of built-in accountability measures. Then you have the courts. You have the criminal courts and you have the civil courts. Then you also have the public prosecutors that examine the causes of death and then take whatever action is within their realm. Then you have the federal government who looks at the
civil rights
assigned to them and adjudge civil rights issues and remedies. So there are tremendous levels of accountability, more so than probably any other profession. And so these remedies are already in place, but they have to be utilized appropriately. And so we're talking about the officer who utilized, tried to
use the taser,
and kill the guy. No intent, this was a horrible tragedy.
Right.
But should she be in prison for it? You think yes, I think no.
Okay, that's a very reasonable explanation of our two points of view. Stand by for the break, and let's discuss it on the other side. Also, we have a caller, Greg, who's waiting patiently and wants to ask you something, so I'm going to let him step in in between that. So don't lose that train of thought about whether or not that officer is an Amber something. I don't remember. Anyway.
Yes.
Yeah, all right. Stand by.
This is Herman Cain. And if it has a muzzle, a nozzle, or a blade, you'll find your topic on America Armed and Free. Sundays, right after Liberty Watch.
Swap shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track.
Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the Swap Shop. Let's listen.
Dawn Wells, is there anything you missed on the island?
Oh, well, actually, what I really missed. There we were with nothing to do. What I missed most was the swap shop. I mean, what fun we'd have had. I don't know how we'd have gotten a hold of you, but we'd have tried.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
I'm Oliver North, and like you, I'm listening on America Armed and Free with Charles Heller. Civilian disarmament is an essential precedent for every dictator who engages in mass murder.
And welcome back to America Armed and Free, where we have the joy and pleasure of having with us Randy Sutton. Randy, I'm not scrolled down to it. The name of your organization again is?
The Wounded Blue.
Okay. Yeah, I thought that was it, but I didn't want to say it wrong. The Wounded Blue, thewoundedblue.org. It's a good organization helping officers who are injured in the line of duty and their families, if they're survivors, to helping them with various things that aren't done by government, and especially when they're mistreated by their former departments. And as I promised, we're going to go to the phones, and maybe not. Hold on just a second. Let's go to this one, and you're on line one. We got to get you onto line two. Let's get you on line two. I'm not sure how we do that. Hold on just a second. We're going to go to caller. Hold on, please. And you're both on the same line. I hope you'll be able to hear each other. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, thank you. Based on what you guys talked about, I think this lady is not a criminal. I think she's just had a bad day. You go to prison for a bad car wreck when there's no other negligence beyond a real accident.
Well, it depends on what you do. If you're speeding, yes, it's criminal. That's a really good example. If you are speeding and you're exceeding the speed limit by a lot, then, yeah, you do go to jail if you cause a death. And if you're using a firearm instead of when you meant to use a taser, you're exceeding the speed limit. Randy, you can disagree with me. And, Greg, you can stay on for – I'm going to put you back on hold because I'm having a little bit of line trouble here. But I'm going to put you back on hold, but you can't have a follow-up. Randy, quick answer on that?
Yeah, sure. I do disagree with you because if you want to use the speeding example – you intentionally were going an excessive amount of speed purposefully. When you are in under the circumstances of Kim Potter, she wasn't intentionally doing anything other than trying to extricate an individual who was being noncompliant and was trying to flee from an arrest for a gun, for a weapons charge.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's two completely different sets of circumstances.
Got it. All right. Greg, do you want to have a follow-up on that? Go ahead.
Yes, I do. I do. I completely agree with your guest. She was not doing something purposeful. Now, Chauvin in Minneapolis, he was doing something purposeful when he killed Floyd, wasn't he? What do you think about that, guest?
Well, yes. Randy, what do you think of that?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that came up because this is another one of those situations where the American public has been so completely misled
mm-hmm.
by the government and by what took place as far as what was released and during the prosecution. Mm-hmm. I urge everyone to check out the documentary film that was produced about the Derek Chauvin trial. It will your hair will stand up.
Yeah, Derek Chauvin did not kill George Floyd. George Floyd had a 5 times lethal dose of cocktail of drugs in his system. They may have been negligent in not putting him in the recovery position, but and he didn't have his knee on his neck. He had his knee on his shoulder. I mean, Derek Chauvin did not kill George Floyd.
That is exactly right. And the fact that the police chief, talk about somebody that needs to be in prison.
Oh, boy.
The chief of police who got up on that stand and lied about the what their department was trained in doing, that man perjured himself and put that officer in prison.
Yep.
Once this became an issue, they removed the part of the training manual that showed that Derek Chauvin did exactly what he was trained
to do. And they hid the fact they removed it, didn't they?
They did.
Yep. All right. Greg, appreciate it. Good challenge. And we're going to go to Brad. Brad, you're on with, let's try that once more with Feeling and see if I can get him on the line. And nuts. I got it. Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead, Brad.
Okay. You kind of hit on what I was going to say. First of all, unlike the Kim Potter thing with the taser or the service weapon instead of the taser, the officers have an extreme amount of training and lethal and non-lethal and everything. And when it comes right down to it, they're put in a very stressful situation, and it's real hard to operate effectively under a real stressful situation. And my main point is the person that put him in that stressful situation was the perpetrator that ended up being dead. If they had complied, all of that would be moot.
And the same thing is true of what's his name that started this all in 1992, Rodney King. If Rodney King had just pulled over, he wouldn't have got hit by the four officers, two of whom got convicted for civil rights violations under 18 right. U.S. Code. So
back to the original thing, the negligence, if there's, perfect evidence of extreme negligence, maybe, if they're going against their training and everything. But on most of these things, I'm going to say no, they should not be prosecuted criminally because most of the time, and even in George Floyd, all they had to do is comply. Some amount of complying, not fight them, and so they wouldn't be dead.
Okay, Randy.
Here's what I'm going to suggest. The documentary film that I'm talking about is called The Fall of Minneapolis, and it was produced by Liz Collin, who wrote a book about it. She was a news journalist in Minneapolis when this took place, and was basically talk about a story. Now, she was one of the number one news anchors in Minneapolis, but she happened to be dating the head of the Minneapolis police unit during that time period. So what happened was the because of the politics, she was basically put in a broom closet and subjugated to basically count paperclips as a result of her relationship with the police union leader. She's the one that has written a book which is fascinating, and more than 5 million people have now seen this documentary, which makes no money. It just tells the truth about it, and it's shocking. I urge everybody to
what's the name of it one more time?
It's called The Fall of Minneapolis.
Okay. Hold on one second, please, Randy. Brad, really fast follow-up before the bottom of the hour break.
No, I think I'm good.
All right. Have a great day.
I want to make that point.
Okay. Thank you. And we're going to take that bottom of the hour break, and then we're going to go. We have one caller left on hold, and I'm going to leave him on hold throughout the break. And you can stay with us, Randy?
Yep, sure can.
Good, because I have a lot more to go on questions to ask about this and to further this, I don't want to call it a debate, to further this issue.
Welcome to Monoral Radio, where we sing in black and white.
And America Armed and Free, we always doubly do right. I thought the moment needed some levity, so there it is. And welcome back to America Armed and Free with Randy Sutton of the Wounded Blue, right? Randy?
That's it, the Wounded Blue, the National Assistance and Support Organization for Injured and Disabled Law Enforcement.
Which has a wonderful group of people associated with it, not the least of which is its leader and founder, Randy Sutton. And they do a lot of good for a lot of people who've been basically mistreated by their departments in their injury, and not only them, of course, many others, but especially some of those people. And we have caller Ingrid who wants to ask you something. Ingrid, you're on with Randy Sutton. Go ahead.
I would agree that she should not be criminalized. However, I do believe that an officer that makes that kind of a mistake should no longer be permitted to be operating in that kind of position. And furthermore, it seems to me that there might be something lacking in the training, something that would weed out people who make those kinds of mistakes in those circumstances. And there might be artificial emergencies created to test how the officer will react.
It's an interesting point. Appreciate it. Randy, I believe you made a point like that a couple weeks ago, but go ahead.
No, that caller was absolutely spot on. I'm going to tell you guys a story, and I think it'll illustrate. First, I'm going to make a statement, and the statement is that most officers, probably 95% of police officers, throughout their entire career, will never use their firearm. You know, we kind of are subjected to the media interpretation of when police, you know, and what police do and when police use firearms. But it's very, very rare in a law enforcement career to actually utilize your firearm in any, not just kill someone, but even fire at someone. So it's a very rare occurrence. And police officers train and train and train for an eventuality that probably will never happen. And so it's critical, because this is the moment of truth for a cop of when they have to make a decision to use deadly force. So I want to illustrate this with a story about some people shouldn't be police officers. And that's it's a harsh thing to say, but and remember, I trained police officers for years. I was not only a field training officer or a field training sergeant for many years, but I was also in charge of advanced training for the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department the ninth largest police department in the country. So this is a topic of which I am very passionate about. So I'm going to tell you a story. When I was a field training officer, I had a recruit who was an older, a lot of police departments, they cut off the age at 35, so you can't become a cop anymore after 35. Las Vegas Metro is not one of those. So we have a lot of mature people, like they'll get out of the military after 20 years, and they'll choose a secondary career as a law enforcement officer. And many of those veterans are tremendous cops, or people that decide to take up the badge later in life. And that was the case with an individual who I was his field training officer. Now, field training is divided into segments. I was his last field training officer. So this man had absolutely soared through the field training program. He knew how to speak to people. He was 42 or 43 years old as a rookie cop. He was a pastor. He knew how to speak to people. He knew how to use force when it was appropriate, not when it's appropriate. He knew how to. He was literally sailing through the program, and I had him in his last stage of training. And there was no doubt that this guy was gonna get off probation, get out of field training, and become a single officer unit, which is what we train people to be. So on this particular night, we were near a shopping center in the late evening, and there was a robbery in progress call, and we were literally half a block away when this call came in. The witness saw a guy get out of a car, pull a stocking mask over his face. He had a machine gun in his hand, and he saw this individual go into the clothing store next to his store and was beating the female clerks with his gun. And we were literally on the scene within seconds. And I told my rookie to take the shotgun, and we posted. We jumped out of our car. We parked in an area where he wouldn't see us. And as we approached, it was like something out of a movie. This guy is running towards the front of the store. He's got a stocking mask on. He's got a bag of money in one hand and a machine gun in the other. Right? I mean, this is like something out of. So
that's out of SWAT, like, or the rookie Nathan Fillion.
Yeah. So my first inclination was to shoot him as he was running towards us, because if he got a burst off with that machine gun, it could be
lethal. Yeah.
Right. But I was in a good position to cover. He was in a good position to cover. So when he came out of the door, I challenged him. I said, "Police, drop the gun." And he did. And he threw the gun down. I ran up and cuffed him, and I told my officer with the shotgun, I said, "Watch him," while I went in to check to see the injuries of the two clerks. So they were okay, and I came back out, and my officer was sweating profusely. He had the barrel of the shotgun pressed against the forehead of the suspect, who, by the way, was 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He had the barrel literally
indenting his forehead, yeah.
And he was basically catatonic, mumbling, "Don't make me use deadly force. Don't make me use deadly force." And I saw this as I'm coming out, and I'm going, "Oh my God, he's gonna shoot this kid."
Yep.
And I said, "Look, give me the shotgun." And I took the shotgun away, and I said, "Go sit in the police car."
Mm-hmm.
That was his last night.
Yeah, that was his last day as a police officer.
Because he and it was his decision. Because, I mean, it was going to be my decision, but he made the decision prior to that and said, "I can't do this job."
Right, because he was deathly afraid of using deadly force.
And so this is – and the reason I illustrate this story is because you never know how you're going to react under those type of conditions until it actually happens to you. And so there's legions of stories about people, of cops that do the right thing, and there's lots of stories. Unfortunately, they end in the death of police officers who are afraid to use deadly force at the appropriate moment. But I tell you that story because it illustrates what the realities are when it comes down to actually using deadly force under those stressful conditions.
I have an experience. I've been for almost 30 years an instructor on the state certified on the use of deadly force myself. I've taught thousands of people about the lawful use of, from a civilian standpoint, about this, the use of deadly force in self-defense. I have never, gladly never pointed a gun at a human being. I've drawn a couple times, but never had a gun point against a human. I've had two against dogs in the last 5 years. And I can tell you that you never really do know what you're going to do. I will tell you with the amount of times I've trained people and the classes that I've taken, everything happened sort of on automatic pilot for me when I came up on the dogs. Both times, every class I'd ever taken squirted through my head, and I actually touched the trigger and began the take-up on the second time, which was last year, as I was backing away from the vicious dog that was coming towards me. And I thankfully, the dog stopped, so I immediately put my finger back on the frame. But I truly did not know until that instant, and I still don't know exactly how I would, I do know how I would respond, but I was never tested until then.
Right. I understand. And so there are so many nuances when it comes down to the use of deadly force. That's why there, when I hear situations like what happened with Kim Potter, and the realization that the politics of the moment played such a massive role in the determination to send her to prison. So that's why when we're having this discussion, there's a lot more to it than just black and white.
There is. We haven't even touched the difference between injury and death and criminal liability. But we have a former police officer, I believe, on the line. And Christopher, your comment or question quickly before the break for Randy Sutton.
Oh, well, my comment is in your long career as a law enforcement officer, I was going to ask you that you stole my muster on the dogs. I was going to ask you if you had any close calls, any sticky situation type, elements with dogs. And then I was going to ask you, I'm just going to go there since you were law enforcement and I place more credence in your statements on, did you ever have anything unusual happen in your capacity as a law enforcement officer? Anything unusual, uncanny? I'll say it, paranormal, like anything spooky.
Okay, that's good. We're up on the break. We'll have him answer that on the other side. Please make note of what Christopher's question was, and on the other side of this break, assuming you can stick with us, right?
I will, and you're going to be shocked by what I tell you.
Okay, in a little bit. So there's a great tease for radio. You're meant for this.
Swap Shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track.
Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the Swap Shop. Let's listen.
I have a Chevy 283 with a Rochester 4-barrel carburetor.
I had a typo in there. I made it a 293. Boarded out 10 over, right on the radio.
Do that a couple more times for me.
We'll turn it into a 302 for you, nothing flat.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch. Imagine that this is your daughter.
What do you want?
Now you get to decide how this scene ends. Or...
Stop, Earl! Stop, stop!
Some misinformed people want to take away your daughter's choice between rape and self-defense. We're pro-choice on self-defense. Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, jpfo.org.
The Lone Ranger.
Thank you.
And where is the Lone Ranger when you need him? Right here on Liberty Watch. And last segment with Randy Sutton, and welcome back. And we were talking about, there was a point being made. You were answering it.
Well, the question was about paranormal or spooky.
Correct, yeah.
And the answer to that is an indelible yes. And I'll try to make this a very brief story. I was involved in several shootings as a police officer, all when I was employed with Las Vegas Metro. 10 years as a cop in New Jersey, I never even had any atmosphere or time when it was time to use my firearm. Never did it under 10 years as a cop in Jersey. But I was still on probation when I was in my first shooting here in Las Vegas, because this is a very rough town. So I was involved in a very, very intense shootout that I survived when in all reality, I should not have survived it. It was a toe-to-toe gunfight. And I was not wearing my body armor and we were literally, our gun muzzles were touching when we were in this firefight, and I survived. It was one of the life-changing moments that I had as a cop. And I survived it, but it took its toll. Believe me, it took its toll. So 3 months after this shooting, I was out on leave because there has to be a huge investigation, and you got to get cleared at that time, the coroner's jury had to do an investigation. And I was finally cleared and I went back to work. 2 weeks after I was back to work, I answered a call that was a check the welfare. It was an individual a woman called us and said, I think my friend may have killed himself because he's been so depressed over breaking up with his girlfriend. And I saw that he had a gun and he didn't show up for work today. I lent him my car yesterday and my car is in front of his apartment. It's dark. I've been calling him all day. I think he was so depressed. I think he may have killed himself. So we go to the door and I call, no answer. The apartment is completely dark. And I get a key from the apartment manager and knock on the door. Hey, John, I know you're in there. Come on out. I don't expect him to answer, and he doesn't, because I expect that he's probably dead on the floor in there. So I challenge a couple times, call in, no answer, open the door, but I don't go in. And this is very critical. I just opened the door and pushed it open. It was completely pitch black inside. And I did what's called a quick peek. And that quick peek means for a very brief second, I just push my head in and then withdraw it within a second to see what I can see, whatever intelligence I can gather. At the same time I do that, I have my firearm that is pointed towards the darkness in case something happens. So at the very second that I did the quick peek, boom, muzzle flash goes off. A shot is fired. And I bring my weapon up to return fire, and something, inner voice, whatever you want to call it, said, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just bailed out. I just bailed out, and we called, officer needs help, shots fired. And I hear a woman screaming inside the apartment. Oh, my God, oh, my God, he's dead. And
You disappeared. If you're moving, stop. If you're not moving, move. Your phone glitched.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
After she said, "Oh my God, he's dead," this is where we lost you.
I put your hands up, and this woman runs out holding clothes in front of her. We pull her behind cover. She's hysterical. She's beaten. What had happened was she was in a 7-Eleven store earlier in the day, mm-hmm. and this guy came up, stuck a gun in her back, never seen her before, kidnapped her, brought her back to the apartment, raped her and tortured her all day long. And when I knocked on the door, he pulled her to the hallway and brought a television console that was on wheels and was using, had her in a headlock and was pointing the gun at the door, waiting for me to walk in. And when I didn't, at the very second that I did the quick peek, he shot himself in the head and killed himself.
Hmm.
So if I had returned fire, there's a good possibility.
You'd have hit her.
Yeah. Right. So now, you know, this is treated just like an officer-involved shooting. The detectives are on the way. And I'm standing outside with the apartment manager. And he says, man, I don't know what it is about that apartment. And I said, what do you mean? He says, I think it's haunted or something. And I looked at him and said, what are you talking about? He said, yeah. He said, 3 months ago, the cops killed the guy that lived there. I was the cop who killed the guy that lived there.
Oh, my God. That is serendipity.
So I don't know what you believe in or what you don't believe in, but I believe that guy came back for a second try at me.
Huh. Interesting. All right. So let's talk about – that was a good answer, and you were as brief as possible with the story. Let's talk about the difference between on-duty and off-duty shootings because I think it's important. You look at the situation that we've been discussing that, about which you and I disagree about the – and some of the callers seem to disagree with me as well, and that's fine. I don't want people to agree. I want people to express their thoughts. So we talk about that difference with on-duty shootings and the one in, I believe, Austin, Texas. It may have been Dallas, where the woman, the officer, had worked a 24-hour shift. She was very tired. She came home and went to the wrong floor of her own apartment building, opened the door, and there was a guy in there who was in his apartment. She thought it was her apartment, shot and killed him. And she also did time for that. So,
right. Another tragic set of circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is your question, do I think she should be in jail?
Yes.
My answer to that, again, is no. No, I don't believe she should. And I'll tell you why. When you are considering putting someone in prison, intent has to be a part of that equation.
Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely believe there was no intent on her part. But this is where the civil remedy comes in, where what was, I mean, this is a tragic set of circumstances. Should there be recompense for the family? 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, this is also another illustration of how police agencies throw their people to the wolves. She should never have been so fatigued that this played a role, but what's happening is agencies are forcing their officers to work mandatory overtime, and the reality is this, and this is one of those things that very few people really, really understand, and that is fatigue mm-hmm. kills.
Oh, yeah. It fatigue makes cowards of us all. We got a caller coming in. I'm going to go ahead and take it in the blind. Caller, your first name, please.
Ingrid.
Ingrid, go ahead.
Did the man in her apartment have a gun?
That's an interesting question.
Yes, he did.
Okay. All right. Appreciate the call. We're getting down to the end of the hour in the last 3 minutes. So fatigue does make cowards of us all. I see that point. Last one. Are you familiar with the case of Jason Van Dyke and the killing of Laquan McDonald in Chicago?
It rings a bell, but I'm... You'll have to refresh my memory.
Okay. Well, there was an incident where a person was coming towards a number of police officers. He was about 20, 25 yards away. He had a knife, and he had it extended, and he had it raised, and they were ordering him to drop the weapon, to drop the knife as he approached. He never got within 50 feet of the officers. Former officer Jason Van Dyke fired, and on the second shot, McDonald dropped, and then Van Dyke proceeded to empty the entire magazine into the prone figure. The video,
okay, I remember this now.
Yeah,
yes,
the
yes.
video was covered up by for almost 19 months by the Chicago Police Department. Finally, there was a lawsuit on it, and the police were forced to release the video. And immediately thereafter, former officer Van Dyke was indicted, and it cost the police chief his job, and it also cost the mayor Rahm Emanuel his job. So, when incidences like that,
do you think that the use of criminal prosecution against the officer may be, and I'm not saying for you to pass judgment, but may be justified? We only have about 50 seconds.
The answer to the question is yes. If someone acts so far outside the scope of common sense, reasonableness, then yeah, that's what that has to be a decision that is made. And you're right, the department covered it up, and the cover up is sometimes worse than the actual crime.
Yeah, just ask Richard Nixon. All right, sir, I really appreciate your forthright answers and your illustrative stories. I'm gonna afraid we still agree to disagree, but you're welcome back anytime, and I love your forthrightness.
Anytime. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
What's the website one last time before the theme music rolls in?
TheWoundedBlue.org. That's TheWoundedBlue.org. Give what you can. Help us. These officers need the help.
Got it. Perfect timing. Randy, have a blessed day.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Well, that was a pretty hot hour of talk radio. I love the callers. I love the interaction between us. I thought that was a lot of fun, and I hope we do stuff like that again. And I want to encourage you. Oh, join us on the 4th of July at 8:30 in the morning at Udall Park. We're going to do the standard reading of the Constitution again. So be vigorous, not violent, vigilant, not vituperative. In liberty, I'm Charles Heller.
Great God, our King.
AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson.